The beautiful state of Utah has hundreds of unsolved cases, including homicides, missing persons, and Jane and John Doe's. Their stories are more than just statistics. They're about lives interrupted and families left without closure. Join us on this journey as we tell their stories and highlight their cases. Stay tuned, stay vigilant, and remember, in the shadows of the Wasatch, mysteries await, and so do the answers. I'm Renee, and you're listening to Utah True Crime. Hello, everyone. I hope you're having a good week. Thanks for joining me again on Utah True Crime. Today's cold case is actually one out of Moab, Utah. This case actually happened in 1973, and honestly, you might have eaten at the restaurant where this woman was murdered. I've never eaten there, but I know a lot of people do eat there when they go to Moab. So this was a difficult case to research, partly because it happened 51 years ago, and partly because there were very little leads from the beginning. Today we're going to be talking about the brutal murder of Ann Hammer Woodward. Yes, like Woody's Tavern in Moab. I bet you're familiar with Moab if you live in Utah, and even if you don't live in Utah, because Moab is a mecca for outdoor recreation and boasts several national parks nearby, including Arches and Canyonlands. Moab's the largest city in the entire county and is on the eastern side of the state, about 2.5 hours southeast of Salt Lake City. Now, in 2020, the population of Moab was around 6,000 people, and at the time of this case in 1973, the population was about 4,700 people. So Moab hasn't grown exponentially since the 70s. Now, I've been to Moab twice this year already for hiking, and I talked to a local there, and she said that a lot of people that are not accounted for in the census are the seasonal workers that come in and work the busy season, which is like March through October-ish November. So, I mean, there's a lot more people living there than just like 5,000 people. If you've been to Moab, you know how magical it can be and how beautiful its red rocks and desert are. So my husband and I love to go. I grew up going as a kid, and now I can go in as an adult, and it's still just as magical. I have never eaten at Woody's Tavern, which is actually on the main street in Moab, so you've probably seen it. It's a little, like brownish wooden building, and it says Woody's in red lettering. And on Google, it's listed as World Famous Woody's Tavern, and it's actually located at 221 South Main Street in Moab. Woody's was established in 1962. So if you've made the connection with the name, which I already told you about, Ann Woodward was the original owner's wife, and she was also co-owner of the bar. So today we're going to be discussing the murder of Ann Woodward. This is a really sad case, and it's a cold case, so it still hasn't been solved, even like 51 years later. Now, Ann was 46 at the time of her death, and she was a mother of four and owned and operated Woody's with her husband, Leslie H. Woody Woodward. Little is known about their marriage. I tried to find what I could, but I do know that they got married in Gallup, New Mexico in 1953. They had four kids, two sons, and two daughters. Not much is known about Ann and Leslie's first 10 years of marriage before they owned the bar. Since this case is pretty old, it was hard for me to research, and I found like very little about Ann online. There was not much about her at all. And that's just not because she wasn't an amazing person, but that's because the case is so old, and we all know that the internet was not around in 1973. So our case begins on March 2nd, 1973, when Ann failed to return home after closing the bar by herself in the early morning hours. You guys know that bars typically stay open late. She was closing alone, which I find a little strange. I know that when I had jobs in the food industry when I was younger, we never closed alone. We were very careful and we were never allowed to close alone. But of course, Anne was an adult and I'm sure that she felt safe doing that. Although I still think it's strange that she was a woman and closing alone, especially back then. Anyways, she was supposed to arrive home and she never did. So her husband, I'm just going to call him Woody, he actually went to the bar at 6:45 in the morning and found her partially nude and lying on the floor between two pool tables. And then later investigation would reveal that she had been raped and strangled to death with her own pants or trousers. So that is just jarring. You know, I'm sure that he was worried that she didn't come home. I mean, I don't know. He might have been asleep. There's not a lot of information about this. I just know that I'm kind of paranoid. And if my husband didn't come home from closing a bar, I would have gone up there. I don't know. I'm kind of like a helicopter person. So this might not have been unusual for her, but he was worried enough to go up there early in the morning. So through an investigation, it was found that someone had opened the cash register and stolen an undetermined amount of money. I've read some articles that say $50 was missing, and then most say undetermined amount. So who knows how much money was stolen. There was a pack of playing cards found on one of the tables, and the police believe that a customer committed the crime after closing time. So they're not sure if maybe the customer hid out in the bar and waited to attack her when she didn't know anyone's there, or if she was able to coax her into opening up the door for them. Maybe she knew this person. They're not really sure. There's not a lot of evidence. Well, speaking of evidence, unfortunately, it seems as though the Grand County Sheriff's Office and the Moab City Police Department lacked the training and experience to deal with a homicide in this year of 1973, which that's nothing new or alarming if you're familiar with true crime and cold cases. Back then, we didn't have the understanding about DNA and how important it is to preserve DNA and preserve a crime scene. So in one interview, former Moab City Police Chief Melvin Dalton said that the crime scene wasn't processed or like kept off properly. Like they didn't keep people out properly and people were allowed to come and go as they pleased, which you just think there's a lot of like cross contamination and I don't know. Who knows who did it? It could possibly be that the murderer was able to go in and maybe clean some stuff up. You never know. We don't know who did this. Although various leads were followed and a number of people of interest underwent polygraph tests, the case hit a brick wall. So it was kind of like a short-lived, they investigated a few people of interest, but it didn't go anywhere. And her children, actually, one of them, I think that there's one still alive today. I couldn't find a lot of information online, but her murder had a severe and lasting impact on her family. So Anne's daughter, Susan, who died in 2019, was quoted in a 2006 article as stating that the morning of her mother's murder was, quote, the beginning of an ongoing spiral into depression and isolation that still affects her and her siblings today, end quote. It was also reported that Susan admits her mother's murder, quote, traumatized us all in different ways. I felt really isolated and alone. My dad was grief-stricken. My brothers and sister struggled with drug abuse and alcohol for a long time. It was a horrible thing, end quote. And I think that's the thing that we miss when we listen to true crime is hearing directly from the family members that this impacts. Some family members are not open to going on the record or making a statement, but this was their mom. They loved their mom. And I can't imagine losing my mom in such a horrific way and it not having a negative impact. So she was very honest in how her mother's murder was affected the entire family. And that has this like ripple effect, honestly. So in 2006, police actually reopened the investigation in the hopes that advances in DNA technology might finally lead to an arrest. They were very hopeful. They also tracked down boxes of evidence that had been scattered across the Moab City Police Department and Grand County Sheriff's Office and the Grand County Attorney's Office. So it seems like the evidence wasn't all kept in one place. And because this was active at one point in time and then kind of went inactive and then they opened it back up, they had to gather all the pieces, you know. Sadly, their efforts did not bring a new suspect or a charge, and it failed to identify a suspect. So it's really sad because this case seems so solvable, and we know that there was probably evidence as to who did this in the bar or DNA evidence left behind, but geez, it was 1973. I mean, DNA testing was not being done back then. That started in its infancy in the late 80s. So I just think that if this murder would have happened even in the 90s, it probably wouldn't be a cold case and it would have been solved. But unfortunately, science wasn't there yet. So this case seems very solvable. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. Detective Jeremy Drexler says that it is absolutely solvable. So Jeremy Drexler was a law enforcement officer and he retired in 2014. He's not from Utah. He didn't work for this agency back then, but he actually saw a job posting in Moab, and his daughter had been to Moab, so he knew it was a beautiful place. So he interviewed for the job and actually kind of took over Ann's case, actually. He said that funding has been made available that will pay for additional DNA testing. And we've talked a lot about how money is a huge barrier for solving a lot of these cold cases because DNA testing is not cheap and it requires a lot of money to send these this DNA and evidence out to labs. He said that Moab Police Department is working with Utah State Bureau of Investigation, and the first step is to collect evidence that could be submitted to a lab for analysis. So he's really taking on Ann's case. He was retired, and he did kind of private work in that time. And now he said he missed working in law enforcement. And now he's actually handling Ann's case. And I think that's amazing. So that's a little bit about Detective Jeremy Drexler and how he's kind of heading up Ann's case. And I think it's awesome. So the most recent report I could find on this case was that in November of 2022, so just a couple years ago, it was reported that funds had been made available for additional DNA testing, as the modern touch DNA methods now allow crime labs to analyze objects for skin cells. So if you've never heard of touch DNA, it is a very advanced and very, very new DNA testing that actually, if I touch a doorknob, they can analyze it for my DNA, even though it's not saliva, even though it's not hair, even though it might not be a fingerprint. Touch DNA is now being used a ton to solve cold cases. And I think that is amazing. And I really hope that they're just in the process of collecting the evidence and getting it sent out for touch DNA analysis. So her case is still open and it's classified as a cold case, although we do know that they are planning to do further DNA testing to hopefully know who did this to Ann. I feel like this is It's so hard because Anne deserves justice and her family deserves to know that the person that did this is either dead or can be prosecuted for this crime. But that was really it. The investigation didn't seem very thorough from the start, and it's not at the fault of the police. It was kind of sign of the times. The 70s, to me, I hear about the 70s and true crime, and they were a little wild. There was a lot of crime happening in the 70s, it seems like. And I think there's numerous factors for that I won't go into. But I just know that the 70s, there are so many cold cases from the 70s. And they're kind of starting to be solved now. Although it's been 50 years. And if that person that murdered her was like in their 40s, they're probably not around anymore. Because they would be in their 90s. And you know, not a lot of people live past their 80s and into their 90s. So I think it's really interesting. And I wonder if it was a local, someone that she knew. I mean, the town was small and it's always been a tourist destination, but not like how it is today and not like how it's been in the past like 20 years. I wonder if it was a local or if it was someone just passing through town or a tourist. I don't know if we'll ever know, but we can hope that DNA testing will give us some information and possibly close Anne's case. So Anne Woodward's case is currently being investigated by the Moab City Police Department and the Utah State Bureau of Investigation. So anyone with information about the murder can contact the Cold Case Tip Hotline at 833-DPS-SAFE. That's safe. And this in numbers is 833-377-7233. You can also contact the Moab Police Department at 435-259-8938, case number 06-2908. And yeah, that's the kind of the short case about Anne Woodward. If you have gone and eaten at Woody's Tavern, please let me know. I'm always looking for new places to try when my husband and I travel. I've seen it. I had no idea murder took place inside. And I honestly am kind of shocked that despite someone being brutally murdered in that restaurant, it's still open today. And not because it's like macabre or anything, but because that didn't hurt business way back then. So Woody actually is no longer around either. He passed in the early 2000s and he never got to know who murdered his wife. And that to me, I mean, going to your grave and not knowing why your loved one was killed or who did it is, I'm sure it's devastating. And it was devastating for Woody. So I really hope that Anne's case gets solved soon with DNA. I think that they have great people on this case and there's a renewed interest in Anne's case. And that can only bring hopefully great good news. So if you know anything, please call the Moab City Police Department. And if you appreciate our podcast and want to help spread these cases in hopes that we kind of start a conversation, and I mean, I'm doing this so that I can help the true crime community in Utah. So if you like this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify. You can subscribe. That also helps us a ton. We have a Patreon. On the Patreon, I will be sharing some personal true crime stories that I've experienced. You'll get a bonus episode each month, and you'll also get ad-free content. So right now, my content is ad-free, but I'm going to run ads soon in hopes to monetize so I can help make donations to the Cold Case Coalition for things like DNA testing. So if you want to support us and can spare $5 a month, you can join our Patreon. And if you are not in that situation, please leave us a review and subscribe. That helps out too. So thank you so much, and I'll see you next time on Utah True Crime. Welcome to the after show, everyone. So this case was extremely, extremely difficult to research. There's very, very little online. And I actually found a lot through a blog that someone had put together. I'm not sure if it was a true crime blog, but it was very helpful to me. So thank you for that. And thank you to all the bloggers out there. Blogging is not easy, and I love reading blogs, and they can be very, very useful sources of information for kind of just about anything. So I tried hard to get more information and details about Anne's case. It was very difficult. And because her case is now open and they're doing DNA testing, we can only hope that she is able to kind of receive a closing in her case. I'm not sure how long they keep cold cases open for. I feel like it's just open for forever unless it's closed. But I'm really hopeful that with the new touch DNA technology that they will be able to learn who her killer is. And who knows, this might be one of those cases where they actually use genealogy to solve a murder. That would be really awesome. So I think that's amazing. Now, I told you guys that I love doing outdoors activities and I love the state of Utah. And this past weekend, my friend came down from Idaho. She's on a short-term contract there in Rexburg. And she came down and we love to hike and kind of do anything outside together. And we actually went rock hounding. Now, if you're not familiar with what rock hounding is, it's kind of like just going out into the wilderness and finding cool rocks and gems and minerals and things like that. I grew up rock hounding. We didn't call it that back then, but digging for quartz crystals and diamonds. I actually went to quartz mines on school field trips as a kid. I've taken my husband to look for quartz. Last summer, we found some amazing quartz. We mined diamonds a couple years ago and didn't find any, but we went, my friend and I went this weekend to central Utah, around Jericho and Delta and, pretty much in the middle of nowhere. And we tried to do some rock hounding and we were lucky enough to come away with some sunstone that is very, sparkly. And we found that on Sunstone Knoll. It was difficult to find because it was overcast and rainy, but, you know, we packed up our car with hammers, mallets, chisels, shovels, buckets, and we found some sunstone. And then we also went out near like Black Spring, I think, and we got obsidian. Now, if you're familiar with obsidian, you know it's a black, it's like a jet black rock. And the rocks are actually, it's more like glass. So it's really sharp. Neither one of us got hurt, thank goodness, but I was a little nervous. But we found two different kinds of obsidian. We found mahogany obsidian, which has like reddish brown veins in it, and it looks like wood, which is why it's called mahogany obsidian. And then we actually found snowflake obsidian, and the snowflake obsidian that we found has like specks of a lighter color. We didn't find any that were like super speckled, but we found some that did have specks. So that was really fun. It was a great weekend out in our great state. And my husband and I are actually going to go rock hounding this coming weekend. So this coming weekend, we'll be down again in central Utah in Beaver. If you know where that's at, you know that they have an amazing creamery. So we're hoping to stop by the creamery and go rock hounding and hopefully find some more rocks. And we're actually thinking it would be cool to turn our obsidian into gifts, Christmas gifts, stuff like that. So obsidian can be made into jewelry or pendants. My microphone just like fell over, so sorry if there was some interference or sound. But yeah, so if you've gone rock hounding in Utah or you know some cool places, DM me on Instagram or email me at utahtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. It's something that I kind of grew up doing, but I'm getting more into as an adult. And it's so fun. And Utah has so many cool rocks and minerals and just really cool stuff. So I just think it's awesome. We can go out and collect our own obsidian and then have it made into jewelry. Just super cool. So anyways, that was my weekend. I hope you enjoyed a weekend. It was kind of overcast and rainy, so maybe you stayed cozy inside. I think that's awesome. I also will be soon interviewing a family member of a missing person for Utah True Crime. And I'm going to try and do that on Zoom. So if you have any tips about using Zoom for recording audio, hit me up. That would be super appreciated. I've never done it, but we're going to try it out. And yeah, that's it. Case suggestions, email me at utahtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to follow our Instagram, I also will message people on there, and we're Utah True Crime Pod on Instagram. So thank you so much for listening and supporting our show, and I will see you next week with another case.